You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, we left our homes up in Bristol Bay for the waters of Miami shore. With a hippo at the helm and our severance pay, we fly the pirate flag once more. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we got wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. For the pirate radio.
How is Graceland?
Oh, man. It's... the whole thing is insane.
Did you get it? I was playing Walking in Memphis.
I definitely got it because I was listening to that while driving from Memphis yesterday, wherever I went, to Mississippi and Alabama.
Where are you now?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
It's kind of like too normal for this trip. What was it? Where was the 8-foot man? Where was that? Where in Illinois?
Alton, Illinois, 8 feet 11 inches. Robert Wadlow.
Did you go to the sandwich shop in Memphis that their sole claim to fame is that they were featured in The Firm, and they're just constantly airing The Firm on TV, and every sandwich is named after a Tom Cruise movie because in The Firm, I think Tom Cruise ran past their sub shop.
We need to do a live show from there. This sounds like the most amazing eatery in the world.
I think the entire time I thought it was a rib, but no, they were just extremely proud of the fact that for a brief fleeting second, they were featured in The Firm. Tell me, you went to that sub shop.
No, there's a store in New York where they filmed a scene in Big with Tom Hanks where they were having dinner in the city, and they have a big picture of it outside the restaurant, and that's its only claim to fame. It was a block away from my law school. I walked by it every day.
So we're going to start this podcast with that fun, jovial, organic, because we're all friends here. You've been touring the nation. You've been driving around the entire country over the last few days. What can you tell us about it?
So I decided that I was going to take my freedom for a spin. And when my dad passed away, I decided I wanted to go to Vegas where he first took me, which is the first hotel in Vegas, the Flamingo, when I turned 21. So I went there, I played craps for 10 minutes. I won $15. By the way, at that table, there were three people separated by plexiglass. And two of the three were talking to me about The Levitard Show and Survivor, which is both funny and not. So I played for 15 minutes and then I rented a car after partying for a full day and I started driving. And I wanted to, I've never done anything like this. I've never done anything solo. I've never done a road trip across the country. And I wanted to take nothing personal on the road. And thanks to the pandemic, how guilty I feel saying those words, but thanks to the pandemic, with a camera, a light, and a computer and a soundboard and a microphone, you can do anything. So I've been driving around now for, about 9 days, going everywhere.
So everywhere, but also places that maybe some people would describe as middle of nowhere. How'd you plan the cities? Is the wind your guide? Because you're going to some random locations.
You know that you can't get anywhere without stopping at nowhere. So that's the whole point of the road trip.
Did you have a nana sandwich when you were in Memphis? A peanut butter and nana sandwich?
No, but I'll tell you, I was at a hotel where the Mavericks were playing the Grizzlies, and the crowd outside waiting for autographs from Luka was unlike anything I've seen except for when we would travel with Ichiro and Bonds. It was more so than for any team I've seen, the number of people who wanted autographs. And it was all about Luka. There was no Porzingis. There was no anybody. And the hotel was on Beale Street right across from the FedEx Forum. But I don't think Luka stopped to sign anything. And I don't think Cuban did either. But people stood there and waited. But they're all autographed. None of them were kids. They were all people trying to get stuff to resell. That's why the players never stop at those things, ever.
So in Graceland, I've never been. I've always wanted to go. This is the second week that we've talked about the 40 pounds of shit that Elvis Presley died with in his stomach. Is there any mention of that?
No.
No?
The way things work is that Graceland, the entire area, is just an homage to him. There is no mention at all that there could have been any lascivious activities or prurient interests. Nothing. It is as though he lived and died at a normal sort of, in a normal way. Same with Johnny Cash. When I went to the Johnny Cash boyhood home in Arkansas, there was no mention of any of the possible drug and alcohol issues he may have had at all. So I think that that is good news in terms of the possibility of improved legacy.
It's true that Nixon gave him, I think it was an FBI badge, right? Because he was like, hey, let me go. And he like just gave it to him because they just, you know, it's a U.S. government. They have them. But Elvis was like, well, it's real now. And he thought it was real.
I just saw the Hemingway documentary, and they just gave Hemingway like the ability to fight in wars and to like lead spy missions. And it was just because he was Hemingway.
Yeah, they're just famous people. And no one that actually grants these people these ceremonial positions thinks that the person receiving it is going to take it literally. But Elvis apparently did, and he thought he was an FBI agent when all he had was just a badge that was just plucked from a bookshelf somewhere.
Are you confusing this with Confessions of a Dangerous Mind?
Oh, that's what that
Gong Show actually was, maybe, in the FBI?
No, I'm not confusing it with that. That's a good movie, Pool. Is that Sam Rockwell?
Chuck Berry was the host. Sam Rockwell was playing Chuck Berry. And yes, the head of the Gong Show is reputed to have been someone who was a leader in espionage.
No, I'm just saying that Elvis legitimately thought he was an FBI agent because he was just handed a badge and he thought that that gave him autonomy.
I am going to ask David a baseball question here just so that when he's finished, you could give me a little limited fake Elvis as an FBI agent. I just want to hear him briefly walking into a crime scene with your crappy limited fake Elvis. This is from Paul Kane. Samson, Mike just mentioned 40 pounds of shit, and Paul Kane managed to do that in a single tweet. He's a congressional reporter, and he writes, "Don't fall for the BS that today's baseball is great because players are so good. They all kind of suck now. No one fields anymore. No one does anything fundamental. No relief pitcher has more than one pitch, so an 0-2 count is meaningless because the hitter knows what's coming." Brandon McCarthy creeped into his mentions and writes the following. "This is an incredible load of shit, like throw away your clothes and hop in the shower amount of shitting yourself here. What are your thoughts, David, as you hear this analysis of today's baseball player, which I believe to be the best version of any baseball player ever made, but there are so many guys who are specialists that it's damn near impossible to hit today. I don't know how anyone hits a baseball today with relievers coming out of the bullpen throwing 100 miles an hour.
So pitchers have always been ahead of hitters, as you know. That is that's old as baseball is. And there are worse hitters now, not because they're not as good or the pitchers are better, because they're not trying to hit. And I think what that quote is missing is that's what Theo has been hired to do in baseball, is to figure out whether or not owners like the current form of baseball, which I don't happen to like at all. And pitchers are pitching, yes, more people are throwing 98, 99, but hitters are just getting down on the knob trying to hit home runs with launch angle and exit velocity because that's how they get paid. And that's something that not enough people are talking about. You can't change baseball without changing compensation. And baseball is not addressing that issue right now.
This is such a terrible spot that you're putting me in. Darn.
Do you think baseball is doomed in that regard? Because that doesn't sound like it's fixable.
Of course it's it's actually the only thing that is super fixable, in that you can absolutely change how arbitration works. You can change how players get paid in free agency. If hitting gaps and doubles and moving runners along, if you get paid for stolen bases, if you get paid for advancing runners, then players will start doing that more. So it's totally the most fixable thing there is, actually, except the union and the owners don't want to fix it because they think that fans like the long ball. What was that? Chicks dig the long ball, right?
Yes, but you're saying it's fixable, where the fix is all we've got to do is start paying for sprayed singles. And no one's going to pay for that because it doesn't have any value in the sport anymore.
But then there's nothing wrong with the sport. You can't have it both ways, Dan. You can't say, or you can't agree with the opinion that there's a problem with baseball and baseball's doomed, and then say no one wants to change it because everyone loves it the way it is.
I don't do a good Elvis. I just want to say that right now. I've been workshopping it, and I've been Fat Elvis slapping on latex gloves walking into a crime scene. I'm workshopping it here, folks, and I don't think there's anything here, but we can try it if you'd like, Dan.
Well, you have properly reduced expectations. No one is expecting anything other than Dan's an asshole for making you do improv.
I'm just trying to.
Yeah, I know. I see you getting in the.
My Elvis impression is just a series of.
Well, but it's not only that. You seem to be holding up a gun with your fingers like one of Charlie's Angels in the post.
I'm doing karate in the background, man.
What are we?
He is. He's doing
watch
karate.
Out. No, watch out, man. Crime scene has me all shook up. Right now. What do we got? We can't go on together with suspicious minds here.
That was good, actually. Suspicious minds was good. I don't understand all the sort of expressions you're making with your hands. And Dan, you just pulled out a David Doyle and a John Forsythe.
Oh, what is this?
I haven't heard those names in a long time.
This crime scene has me all shook up. Is in the ghetto.
Ken Griffey Jr., turning to more subject matter that's more serious here, David, because you really did move people last week with your honesty about panic attacks. I don't know that you've gotten a better reception from the audience for expressing that vulnerability and sharing it. Ken Griffey Jr. revealed recently that at 17 years old, because of complications with relationship with his father, that he took 277 pills trying to end his life. I never know, and we never know, what is roiling, the turmoil roiling within anybody. But tell us about what last week was like for you, because you tend to answer questions when we ask them, and you gave up a lot of information about something that was vulnerable for you.
I think that I was surprised at how not alone I am. And what was nice is that the audience reaction to panic attacks is so many people have them, and everyone thinks that no one else is having them, and everyone is worried, actually, that everyone's staring at them or that they're going to lose their jobs or not lose their relationships. And I tried to answer every DM I got on Twitter, and there were so many. And I think I got to almost all of them, actually. And what is interesting is that mental health, for whatever reason, and this is true in sports, I was brought up in my entire sports career to talk about physical injuries with players. We had a sports psychologist, and we had a program that we did. We called it a performance psychologist because we didn't care what was going on off the field with the players. We just wanted them to perform on the field. And I look back at that as another failing of mine, because if you actually care about what's going on with your employees off the field, you will get better performance from them on the field. But for us, it was always just about performance on the field. But even then, it was sort of a side thing, a little budget. And I look back and realize that mental health, for whatever reason, has a stigma. And talking about it on your show and allowing us to talk about it on your platform helps more people than, you know, Mikey's Elvis impersonations or talking about the general nonsense that we talk about, because people love the escape we give them here every week. You give them every day. But it's hard to escape from yourself. You never can. And so this show is fun for people. But once in a while, when you say that, hey, we're normal, and I'm not sure that any of the three of us are normal in any way under any definition, but certain parts of us are.
We're going to get to David Sampson's top five failings in a second as the Marlins president, but I'm going to give him a time to think about that because this one is hard. Top five failings as Marlins president.
And he's going to have to think about that while I throw another question his way, because you mentioned Ken Griffey Jr., and I've been listening to the American Prodigy podcast, which is a good refresher on, I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. was my favorite baseball player. I hit zero for a little league season, but I did it with a 24 on my back because I thought he was the coolest with a backwards cap. If you remember, towards the end of his career, he fell asleep in the White Sox clubhouse. I totally forgot that he went back to the Mariners, and his retirement was actually kind of fascinating. He just abruptly started driving to Montana, and he didn't show up for work one day, and the Mariners just announced he retired. He was very quiet, but he did hit a milestone home run at, well, I think at the time was Sun Life Stadium, the 600th home run when he was playing for the Cincinnati Reds. Do you have any good stories surrounding that milestone home run of Ken Griffey Jr.'s?
That was actually a very big deal. We were looking at the schedule. We were planning for that because we wanted to sell into it. So we were trying to get people to come to that series on the thought of seeing a big home run like that. And it happened. And I was at the game actually with my one of my children. And of course, I can't remember who. And the ball was caught by one of our fans. And I spent the entire game trying to buy the ball back from the guy. And he would not sell it back. And I got Griffey involved. I was in the clubhouse dealing with him. You know, Griffey is one of the great talents of our generation. He wasn't the hardest worker in the world. And I think that cost him at the end of his career and shortened his career. But he did not offer enough money to get his own ball back. He didn't really care about it. And the guy kept it and sold it and probably, you know, invested the money or bought Bitcoin or Dogecoin or NFTs. I'm not sure what.
Do you remember what your best offer was trying to get that ball? And do you remember in general what your best offer was in any circumstance to get anything in that situation?
Well, you're talking about doing something for someone on the road, not our team. And that's something that I didn't do often, right? No matter what the milestone was, if it's just a sort of run-of-the-mill milestone, they take the ball out of play and that's it. And we were always good about that. If the ball would fall somewhere in pro player, they would often fall. Do you remember the teal scoreboard in left field that actually was the sideline bleachers for football? They push them out and bring them back in. Balls would sometimes fall there and we'd get them and give them back. The thing with Griffey's ball was that I wanted bats and uniforms, and that was the offer I was making to the guy. He didn't care about that. He just wanted money. And Griffey was very clear that he was not going to do a penny to get that ball. And it was a big deal, 600 home runs. And so we were going to put in money because I wanted to do something nice. And I'd spoken to Jeffrey about it. And we were willing to go up to 25 grand of Marlins money along with Griffey's bats and jerseys and all the other stuff. But he would not budge. And it's something I look back on because there's nothing. The ball's gone now. The ball has passed hands and changed hands. And that's the end of it. But Griffey was not disinterested, but uninterested in the outcome of my negotiation.
If you get to game three in that series and he hasn't hit the home run yet, are you starting to look at your bullpen, maybe a coach, be like, maybe we're starting to groove in some fastballs here. We put a lot of promotion into this. Like, I need this home run hit in this ballpark.
No, not even close. Thank you, Chris. That is a huge welcome to the show. I appreciate that input. Not even a chance, but I'm sure that you don't believe me. But no, the only thing that we ever saw grooved was Bartolo Colon grooving a fastball to D. Gordon on September 26th. Other than that, there's not much conversation about grooving that goes on.
Best offer of any kind that you've made for something? Because $25,000 is a pretty substantive offer.
Yes, that's it. That's the biggest event that happened from a road player ever in our history.
Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. Springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. I've had it in my home for many, many years. I love it. Springtime to me, we love to travel. And I love the fact that no matter where I am in the world, I can keep an eye on my home thanks to Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe blankets your whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more, plus a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. That's simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
I've got a top five list of my own to buy David Sampson some more time for his top five list. Running theme here. It's a top five of celebrities I just noticed either color their hair, have systems in place, or do something to alter their appearance by using performance enhancers. I can do this
now. Wow, again, a new, fresh top five. Do you think you're going to be able to do this every couple of weeks here?
I'm just obsessed with this. Again, I project my own insecurities on celebrity, and I make fun of them in public just to cover up my own warts, Dan.
Many people do that as a collective. Mm-hmm. They project their things onto others. Number five, Mike.
Chuck Norris wears a wig.
Dear God.
Yeah, he wears a wig.
Put it on
Are
the
you sure
pole.
About that?
Yeah, I'm 100% sure
Be
that's a
careful.
Wig.
Put it on the poll, Chris, please. Do you think that Chuck Norris wears a wig? Number four.
He's a very handsome man. It works for him, but I believe he's had a hair transplant and dyes his hair. Ryan Reynolds, I'm on to you.
Oh, my God.
I watched Two Guys and a Girl, the TV show, not anything else. I watched that show. Your hair was way worse back then. It doesn't make any sense.
David Sampson was open-mouthed shocked at that accusation.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds. Hair transplant and hair dye. Obvious.
No, that's not possible. You're not married to Blake Lively when you're doing that.
No, you're married to Blake Lively because you did that.
Wow.
Number three.
Tyson Fury is not 6'9". I stood next to him yesterday. Bullshit. All right, the guy's 6'6", tops.
You came in saying the heavyweight champ is small today.
Yeah, I could take him by looking at him. I felt like I could take him. He is not 6'9". A 6'9" is a giant person when you come into contact with them. This guy barely saw over my head.
You know that all athletes lie about their height, right? When we list them, you have to give a listing. Back in the day, or even in this day, players are listed with height and weight. And we weighed our players. They had to do a weigh-in. And as it stands, only one player ever gained weight during the season at Pro Players Stadium. It's so hot that we had to monitor because every player was losing weight. Gabby Sanchez was the only player gained weight during the season, which is obviously difficult to do. Love him, but that's hard to do. But we would ask the players, you know, where do you want to be listed? What height, what weight? Because we didn't care because it's irrelevant. And the NBA does that too. Everybody in the NBA is shorter than what they list themselves at.
Number two.
Running theme here, combat sports. I saw this when Jake Paul snatched his hat. Floyd Mayweather has been patching up that hair. What are you doing? Go see a barber.
He looked old when the hat got snatched.
And then he started doing press after the hat got snatched, and all of a sudden the hair was full again. Something's going on there, Dan.
Number one.
I saw this yesterday, Dan. Courtesy of David Sampson's Twitter account, Dan Ugla, fake teeth.
Oh, you have shocked David Sampson again. What are you holding up
I saw
a finger
it, man.
For? Fake teeth. The accusation's been made. The teeth are a little too perfect on Dan Ugla.
I'd like you to be a little more clear if you're going to say that, because I'm going to take this slightly personally for Dan. When you say fake teeth, are you talking George Washington wooden teeth? Are you talking a bridge that he puts on the side of the bed? Or are you talking like Giancarlo Stanton after losing his teeth by getting hit with a ball, getting some crowns and things like that? What exactly are you talking about?
I'm talking about what Tom Cruise has going on. That's a bonus one for everybody. Fake teeth. He didn't like his teeth before. Now he's got new ones. And you don't get pearly whites like that when you rip heaters the way that Dan Ugla did in the early 2000s, my friend.
That's true.
Chris, put it on the poll. Are Dan Ugla's teeth just a little bit too perfect? Are you ready? David Sampson rarely feels this kind of horror and shame. Your head is in your hands. Why are you so defensive and protective of Dan Ugla's clearly fake teeth?
Recency bias. I was just with him last night having a blast, and he would have no indication that his teeth were going to be talked about on the show today. He knew that I had to wake up and do the show. It didn't matter because we hit it pretty hard last night, and I am feeling just fine with water. But I assured him, coincidentally enough, that his teeth wouldn't come up on the show. So now we have to figure out how to edit this.
You shouldn't have posted that selfie because it jumped off the screen. And I think you went hard, and for Dan Ugla, that was a quiet Wednesday night. Did you end up going to the Tarpon Bend? just out of curiosity.
Automatic slims.
All I can say is that we enjoyed chicken wings.
That's all you can give us from a night out with Dan Uglett? Did he wear an Affliction shirt?
First of all, the fact that you don't get that reference is very sad. Very sad. We're in Atlanta. Chicken wings.
Oh, wow.
Anybody? Bueller?
Yes, I got it. Chicken wings, strip clubs. Were they delicious? The wings. The wings.
The wings.
The wings is what I was asking you about.
Everything's fine. I don't even know what you're talking about. I did not have any kind of wings. I don't eat wings. I've stopped eating wings. I used to eat wings. I don't like wings any longer. I don't like the sauce.
You prefer breasts?
I am definitely a breast guy over a wing guy. There's no question. You can't find good breasts. So therefore, I try to look for different restaurants now.
I literally pulled my shirt collar when you did that.
like Rodney Dangerfield? Top five David Sampson failings as Marlins president. Are you ready, David Sampson?
Yes, it didn't take me long. I was just listening to your toupee conversation, but this is an easy one. I thought you were going to give me top 20. Number five, when I bum rushed the stage at an owner's meeting with concern that we were not going to get our way with an issue. And I actually bum rushed a stage where the commissioner was. And that is not what you do when you're at an owner's meeting. And it was one of my first owner's meetings. You want top five with Marlins. I'm giving you top five in my career. That was early on, and that was not smart of me. And to say that, number four, it is a failing that I bought a cowboy hat and wore cowboy boots when we were trying to relocate the Marlins. And I look foolish. I'm a 5'5". I'm actually 5'4" and 7/8", but I say 5'5". And I wore boots and a hat to a game in Houston pretending we were going to move to San Antonio.
Is the Oakland A's threat real? They're talking about moving if they don't get the kind of stadium they want from taxpayers. Is that as fraudulent as your cowboy hat, cowboy boot thing?
Yes. What the most fraudulent point, and I talked about it on Nothing Personal a little bit, is that it's being played out as though MLB has told the A's to search for a place to relocate. That's not how it works in baseball. You have to ask MLB as the team. You ask for permission to seek relocation, and then MLB grants you that permission. It doesn't get initiated by the league, but the league is trying to provide cover for the A's so their fans don't hate them.
Do you think they'll move? Any chance?
I think that they're trying to get $855 million of public money, and it's hard to get that right now. After what we did in Florida, people are unwilling, and it's hard to get public deals done. But I'm not sure that baseball is going to give up our expansion city so that John Fisher can relocate the A's.
You ruined it for everybody, right?
Yeah. Is that a point of pride that you're the high watermark when it comes to this?
You start your career bum rushing the stage, and you leave the stage shitting on baseball with $1.2 billion. You.
I'm not sure that I shit on any stage because I've got some sort of duodenum control. And I'm not proud of anything other than I did my job. And I do it again.
Number three.
I should have had a better conversation with Mark Burley when we were trading him in 2012. He was a friend. We had signed him. And I called him up to tell him he was traded to the Blue Jays. And we've never spoken since. And I've tried every year on his birthday. I've tried through his wife, Jamie. And he will not in any way respond to anything. Because I want to be in touch with him and I to apologize for how it all went down in 12, because he didn't want to go to the Blue Jays at all because they don't allow pit bulls. And I promised him that we'd take care of him, and then we traded him.
You guys did an episode about this, or you had this conversation, and some of you are hurt. You feel genuine hurt there. What happened, though? Were you just corporate cold because it's always nothing personal and you just forgot about friendship, or what?
I actually caveated the conversation when I called him. I said, Mark, I got to tell you what's happening here, and I'm sorry, but you've been traded to Toronto. And he was silent on the phone. And it is not often that I would call the players to say they were traded. There were only a few players over the course of the career. I actually was talking to Ugla about how that, you know, Ugla lied to me last night. He's claiming that he did not have a 5-year deal with Atlanta in the bag when he turned down our 4-year deal. And he's sticking to that story. And I told him I'm going to bring this up on my show, but I'm bringing it up now with his pearly whites. There's no way that he did not have that deal when he turned down $48 million over four from us, and he ended up getting $62 million over five from the Braves, and that got him 10 years in the big leagues, fully vested for his pension. He had that deal. I don't know why that just came to my mind.
How did you detour from I feel so bad about Burley to swiping Ugla, confirming the fake teeth, doing everything you just did there to Dan Ugla to deflect away from the fact that you botched the Burley thing?
I've never confirmed the fake teeth. That's number one. Number two, I'm deflecting away because I do feel pain. I didn't feel anything at the time because it was nothing personal. We had to do it. But time has changed that. It's been 9 years. And I look at that entire situation and I had closure with Jose Reyes during the World Baseball Classic when he bought a house. He signed with us and thought he was going to live in Florida. And then we traded him to the Blue Jays. And he and I sat down and had a conversation at Marlins Park about what happened. And I never got that closure with Mark Burley. And I wish I had.
So you don't blame him for being mad?
No, but what I blame him for and what I will tell him when I speak to him is that he only came to Florida because we offered him the extra guaranteed year. And he never, that was it. We offered him more money and more years than anybody during his free agency. And all he had to do was thank us. And he was so angry about the deal, about the trade, that he never took the time to say, wow, I'm only in Florida and I only agreed to a no trade clause. He wanted a no trade clause, FYI, and we wouldn't grant it to him. And we gave him that extra year and that extra amount of money. And there was certainly never a thank you. That's for sure.
Number two.
The second biggest failing I ever had was actually in Florida when we were negotiating a contract for a manager. And it was, we brought in Jack McKeon, and then Jack was going to be gone and Mike Redmond joined us. And my biggest failing was not communicating enough with Mike Redmond about the fact that Jeffrey wanted to fire him and that Jeffrey was interviewing other managers who he wanted to bring in, whether it was Bobby Valentine or anybody else. And I lied to Mike saying, you're fine. That's not going to happen. And Mike Redmond has never spoken to me since then. And he's another person I text on his birthday every single year. And I never get a response. I saw him at a winter meetings and we had an uncomfortable cold to low, but he and I used to be close. And it wasn't my fault what happened to him. It's part of the game, but it hurt the relationship, and that's a fail.
I had a meeting with an ESPN executive that my agent at the end of it, after the executive had left the table, never to return, said to me, "That's the worst meeting I've ever seen that didn't involve Bobby Valentine. You have to have some good stories about what was happening behind the scenes on Bobby Valentine and how close he was to being the Marlins manager."
Bobby Valentine was hired to be the Marlins manager. I'm not sure that people understand that. We had a deal in place with Bobby Valentine that Jeffrey did. And Jeffrey asked me and Larry to go over the bullshit specifics of different things because he had a million requests and things he needed and wanted. And we had no choice. We were bringing him in. We had been denying it to the media nonstop. And word had gotten out through Bobby's camp, of course. And it ended on the street in Washington, D.C., outside of the Nationals ballpark, when we did a call with Bobby and I made Jeffrey be on the call. And Bobby showed his true colors on that call. He was so rude and belligerent to me because I was not going to let him have a few things that he thought that Jeffrey had agreed to. And Bobby lost his mind. The second manager to lose his mind, Jeff Torborg being the first toward me, Bobby lost his mind. And we were able to convince Jeffrey not to hire Bobby, saying, look what you're going to get. You are going to get someone who is unstable, someone who's not good for your team, someone who's not going to win for you, and it's going to end any relationship you have. And Jeffrey never believed it until that phone call, and then he let us get rid of Bobby.
So
Bobby got fired before he got to manage a game.
So you set it up, though, so that Bobby Valentine didn't know that Jeffrey Loria was listening, and Jeffrey Loria overheard him confirming basically everything you were accusing him of?
You're very close, but not exact. So what I set up is that I was riling up Bobby because I knew all you had to do was put a little bit of fresh meat in front of him and he's going to bite. So I riled him up and then got Jeffrey on the phone, told Bobby that Jeffrey was on the phone, then continued to feed him the beef. And boy, did he bite.
Number one.
This one's more serious and not funny. and it's sad because I think about it every day. My biggest failing in my in one of my top five of my life was listening to Scott Boras and giving Jose an extra day of rest. Jose Fernandez was a pitcher of ours who passed away. And the only reason he died is that we delayed his start by a day because we had pitched him too long. His last start in September of 2016, Boras called me and Mike Hill and yelled at us because we had violated an agreement about how many pitches he could have and demanded he got an extra day of rest. And we said no, but then he called Jeffrey, of course, and then we had to agree to pitch him on Monday instead of Sunday, which means he was going to go out Saturday night, and he passed away. That will be the failing that I live with the rest of my life. We listened to a jackass agent who could care less about anybody but himself, and now there is someone who's dead.
But it could have happened any number of ways.
But it didn't.
Okay, but I mean, that guilt gives you a control over life that you don't exactly have.
I understand what you're saying, but there's nothing I can do about it. I think about it every day, every single day. I think about the phone call replays in my head every single day. Something happens or I'm talking to his ex-girlfriend or his girlfriend just now that he's passed away and thinking about the daughter. And every day there's something I have to do regarding that. And so I think about that phone call and giving in to Scott and not thinking anything of it and then getting the call about the accident the next morning. I cannot believe that that's the time I chose to allow an agent to dictate what we were going to do. You never let an agent dictate anything because they don't know shit about shit. And that's the time we gave in.
Is that part of your resentment toward him? I know you have a great deal of hostility toward him, and it's a resume complete with a lot of different stuff. But is the epicenter of it the fact that it's hard for you to forgive all of that? That not only is that something that you live with, but also you saw Boras, you know, do the press conference, funeral tears, and then vanish.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's too many things to even mention of all the things that he did and does that really show the true colors. If you're inside the game, you know very well what kind of agent he is. You know that he takes care of only the best players. And once the best players aren't good anymore, then he gives it to his lesser people, his underlings. So no one in the game is surprised about how Scott dealt with Jose and his family once Jose was dead, because Jose didn't represent money for Scott any longer. But Scott's good at his job. Players keep hiring him and owners keep bailing him out. So I don't blame Scott for being good at his job. I just wish he'd be more honest and just say, hey, I'm just in this for money and the most money I can get for the players. But keep in mind, it's what he did to us with Wei-Yin Chen. A terrible signing the Marlins had. Boras was his agent. Boras tells Jeffrey, you put Wei-Yin Chen with Jose Fernandez, you're playing in October. And that's what owners want to hear. But remember, you've got to give him that fifth year, because if you don't, then you're not going to make the playoffs. He doesn't say he's not going to sign with you. He says you've got to make him feel comfortable. And the way to make him feel comfortable is by giving him that year, and then he'll be a Marlin. What a crock of crap.
I did want to briefly live in an alternate reality where you go to the transition of now someone's dead and I hit the fanfare.
Yeah.
But
I saw Mike retreat there. He made a production decision where he was going. He wanted to just conclude a top five list in the way, just to bring closure. He can be OCD about these things.
We have a reoccurring theme, but no one's exactly tossed to it with a death before.
Yeah, we couldn't do anything with that, so we just stared at each other and we got a little bit scared, and Mike again pulled at his collar like I haven't seen since I mentioned breast.
So I didn't mean to make this serious. You asked me about a failing. That's what failings are, when you could have done something differently and changed the outcome of an event. That's my definition of a fail.
Let's have a little less conversation. I don't sports. I feel like a real hound dog.
I love how limited it is. Doing karate to the microphone.
No gun. I'm kicking the microphone, man.
Can we talk about the
40
Elvis?
40 pounds of shit in my stomach, man.
I want to talk about the Elvis karate phase, because I do associate him and Colonel Parker with just an out of control phase where Elvis was allowed to do karate because he was Elvis.
Not a two piece. This is audio, but I'm really throwing kicks here. I'm just going to kick the microphone.
What's this? turned into.
Oh, now he just froze and did a couple of finger points at the camera now with his one hand over his head and his
doing
other.
Doing it my way. I'm doing it my way.
His body is a little jello right now, and he's really loose, and he's feeling the king inside his soul.
You need a platform where you can do video on demand, because I'm not sure I've seen a better impression. You go through Memphis and Nashville, there's a lot of Elvis impersonation. But what you just did, that's pretty unique. I'm surprised you didn't fall off your chair, though.
Equilibrium of 40 pounds of shit in your gut.
Let's review the movie. Are you going to do a good movie or a bad movie this week?
I'm going to do a mixed movie that you're going to want to watch, though. It's called Greenland. Have you seen it?
I've seen, okay, it's on HBO Max, and yes. It's another action destruction apocalyptic movie starring Gerard Butler, who's had a sneaky nice career out of making B-action movies.
So is the definition of a B-action movie just a lower budget movie in your mind? Is that where you get to B from?
Yeah, yeah, a movie that barely qualifies as a theatrical release. Lower budget, like the computer graphics aren't exactly great, but, you know, when you can't get Ryan Reynolds, you go Gerard Butler.
It's not Deadpool. It's not a Marvel movie.
You know what I mean.
Or the Hitman's Bodyguard. You know, Ryan Reynolds, is he now an action star? Is that what he's become from Van Wilder to now an action star? Is that one of the greatest transformations? Second, of course, the number one is Spicoli to Sean Penn. And what he is now, but Ryan Reynolds may be one of the top transformations of all time. That's a top five list that I could wrap my arms around.
All right, we'll do that at the end of this segment. Top five transformations.
Yeah, I mean, no transformation bigger than the one that happened on top of his head, because he was balding and he's gray. And he actually leans into the gray a little bit, and he admits, I mean, he has to, because that beard is silver, but his hair, it's total performance enhancing. Total.
Are you allowed to say that LeBron has performance-enhancing hair?
I mean...
Does he make your list?
He doesn't even do it well. Everyone dunks on him for that.
I'm just asking, is he on your list? Because Ryan Reynolds does not deserve to be on your top five hair list.
Look, I'm not telling you to think. I'm just asking if you'd like to. And I don't want to put the obvious ones out there for the audience. LeBron James, that's low-hanging fruit, David. I want to... Like, did you ever give thought to maybe Chuck Norris wearing a wig before? Did you ever, prior to me?
No, but I also am not a changed person because you told me Chuck Norris wears a wig.
Man, when you said B action movie, I started imagining the sequel to Seinfeld's B movie that was an action movie. What are we doing here? I don't know. That's all I have is Seinfeld is a B.
Greenland, go ahead and review it, David. I love the idea of that, a B action movie.
I can't even compete with Chris, who interjects the funniest things at the weirdest moments. Welcome to the show. Morena's in that movie from Homeland and from Deadpool. Speaking of Ryan Reynolds, that's why it was all in my mind. I can't really pronounce her last name, but do you know what it is? She's just a beautiful, great actress. And her name is Morena Baccarin, I want to say. She's in Greenland as well. It's about an extinction level event, and it is so ridiculously contrived. They have to get to Greenland. If you're in Greenland in a bunker, you're good. If you're in a bunker in the States, you're no good. And so you're chosen to be in a bunker, and he's about to go be safe, and he's got to go get something out of his car. And that sets up a lot of the plot, and it is insane. So I was okay watching it because it was an hour and 51 minutes. The fact that it was a B level movie didn't bother me because it's not about the graphics. The dialogue was fine. The script was okay. Gerard Butler, I keep thinking about the bounty hunter as opposed to his B action life. But any movie that has Morena in it, I'm going to watch. But I would have liked a better end. The end is always when they emerge, right, from after the end of the world, and Morgan Freeman gives a speech, or Bill Pullman, that we're going to rebuild and everything's going to be fine. Why does every end of life movie have to have the beginning of the next life as sort of to tie it in? It's like there's a Hollywood studio exec who says, no, you've got to end it with everything's going to be okay. We will rebuild.
Mike Ryan just whispered in my ear while you were talking, I have two Elvis sounds that we have to get into. I hope that one of them, negotiated away from ESPN, is the one where he got angry at the audience. Do you still have that
one? I'm trying to find that one. So you're going to have to give me time to do that. But in the meantime, he has this really infectious laugh, Elvis Presley does. And it just puts a smile on my face every time I hear this.
Is Elvis the happiest person you've ever heard with 40 pounds of shit in his belly?
So actually, guys, this song is an incredibly sad song about a woman that he has lost. And he is incapable of singing it in a romantic way because he's that heartbroken about it. There's a great Malcolm Gladwell podcast about this song.
Chris Whittingham is a fancy lad.
It was a good podcast episode. It was.
It was. I actually heard that one as well, and it was horribly sad, and I didn't know whether you were going to go to Whittingham there or the fanfare sound that the Elvis and Elvis was mourning with a great deal of grief, the loss of love. Give me the number one Elvis sound that you wanted to play.
I got sicker that one night. I had 102 temperature. They wouldn't let me with the warm. From three different sources, I heard I was strung out on heroin. I swear to God, hotel employees, Jack, bellboys, freaks that carry your luggage up to the room, people working around, you know, talking, maids. And I was sick. I was, you know, I was getting, had a doctor, had the flu, and I met over one day. And was like, but all across this town, I was strung out. So I told him earlier, and don't you get offended, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to somebody else. If I find or hear the individual that has said that about me, I'm going to break your damn neck, you son of a bitch. That is dangerous. That is damaging to myself, to my little daughter, to my father, to my friends, my doctor, to everybody, my relationship with you, my relationship with up on the state. It is dangerous. I will pull your damn tongue out by the roots. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I thought the funniest thing in there was my doctor. It was, but no, he closed out. The dismount was perfect. You cannot get a better dismount than his rage boiling over, but courtesy at the end.
I will pull your damn tongue out of the roots. Thank you very much.
Incidentally, I think Elvis has a normal sounding voice, but that's what happens when you have 40 pounds of shit stuck inside of you.
That is one of the funniest things I have ever heard him saying, like just with genuine vitriol, threatening his entire audience that he's not merely going to pull the tongue out, but he's going to do so by the roots, lest there be any confusion of why your tongue is in Elvis's hand. And then he's like, but let me be courteous right before I leave.
I will pull your damn tongue out of the roots. Thank you very much.
And then he does a countdown to Teddy Bear, like 2, 3, won't you? Won't Teddy Bear.
Two Gats here for my friends over at Simply Safe. Springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes, and it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. I've had it in my home for many, many years. I love it. Springtime to me, we love to travel, and I love the fact that no matter where I am in the world, I can keep an eye on my home thanks to Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe blankets your whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more, plus a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. That's simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.